Welcome to the July 24th dual platform service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. The service is led by Reverend Pam Phillip and Worship Associate Heather Nicholson. Cultures through time and around the world have some concept of soul. Early in the service, Rev Pam lists 7 different ones. In her homily, she reflects on how her understanding of soul has evolved and how our personal definition might affect how we see ourselves and our place in the world.
Good morning and welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the New River Valley, where we share a mission to inspire, create, and transform. My name is Heather Nicholson and my pronouns are she and her. I'm a 5-year resident of Blacksburg, a graduate of Union Theological Seminary, and I am honored to be your worship associate today. I will wear a mask today, so my trip to see my mom goes uninterrupted this week. My son, I was a little bit worried if you would be able to hear me, and my 14-year-old son said, "Speak loud, speak slowly, and enunciate." So that is what I will try to do for you today. I am leading worship this morning with our minister, Reverend Pam Phillips. If you are with us for the first time, we are glad you found us. You are welcome in this space, and we look forward to sharing our community with you. You will find a link to the visitor's card in the chat or a paper card in the back of the sanctuary. Please fill it out if you would like us to keep in touch with you. If you have a joy or sorrow you wish to be shared aloud, you will find a link in the chat or cards are available near the entrance of the sanctuary, and we'll be collecting those during the opening hymn. There are also many opportunities to meet virtually or on the grounds throughout the week. You can look at the calendar on our website for times, locations, Zoom links, and contact information if needed. Thank you to all the volunteers this morning and throughout the week who make all of these activities and all the work we do possible. And I'd also like to extend a thank you to the parish family for the beautiful flowers that were a part of the celebration of life held here yesterday for David Parrish.
Good morning. And David Parrish is Joe Parrish's father. And you'll also notice out in the foyer, there's a beautiful tablecloth that Jeanette Parrish, David's mom, donated to the congregation, and which is perfect for the table on which it sits. I just want to let you know too that in the back of the sanctuary there are crayons and paper and glitter and googly eyes if you feel the need to get up and express yourself artistically. You'll notice that everyone is wearing a mask today because we are now in the CDC red zone for COVID. We'll be requiring masks in the building, but I took a rapid test this morning and I am negative. I asked Lindsay Marr, our resident expert, on whether or not it would be safe for me to do this. So rest assured, I am negative. So I hope I won't be giving you anything and you won't be giving me anything. I want to let you know that downstairs this morning, the children are celebrating a new day for me. It's Pi Approximation Day. I have no idea why July 24th is Approximation Day, but it is. So they will be measuring pi, eating pi, playing pi card games. So who knew? I'm trying to think if there's anything else I need to tell you. It is good to be back with you all after time away. So now let's take an opportunity to greet one another. Those of you who are at home, if you will turn on your videos, we're going to put you up on the screens here. If you wave and tell us where you're worshiping from, I'll let the folks here know where you are. Let's see. It says Seth is here, good morning, from Christiansburg. And Tony is here from Roanoke. And Ann from Pulaski. And Doug and Sally from Airport Road here in Blacksburg. Bill in Floyd. Gretchen in Christiansburg. Brenda from warm Italy. Barbara from Radford. Gail from Galax. Irene and Molly in Uptown, Christiansburg. Brianna and Floyd, Sam and Jim in Ellet Valley, Avi in Pulaski. Welcome home, Avi. I know you've been away. Oh, Linda Sisson is here from Bangor, Maine. That's Susan Gurley's sister. Hi, Linda. It's good to have you here with us today. All right, we're going to do something a little different. Oh, Casey is here from Highland Park. I'm going to light this candle here so we're ready. So, it came to our attention in the worship team that the people in the sanctuary don't really get a chance to greet one another. So what I'm going to ask you to do, if you're here in this space, is look around and see who is here. Find someone's eye and catch it. And smile, because even though you have a mask on, you can smile with your eyes. And while you're doing that, and you can wave too, waving is good. I will show with people at home who is here. There's Brian, our vibraphonist. There's the folks back in the Avery room. I'm getting really good at this, aren't I? We have been doing this almost a whole year, being in this way together on Zoom and in person. And it is good to be together. All right, we have greeted. Now, let us create sacred space.
Please join in reading the words on your screen as we light this chalice. We light this chalice for the warmth of welcome, the light of hope, and the fire of service. Our opening words today are "Invitation to Arrive and Rest" by Sherry Woodbury. So settle in your seats. Take a deep breath. Out of the din of the city, away from the noise of the crowds, we come to rest in this moment, in this place, set apart from the never-ending to-do list, embracing the seventh day, a day of rest. We come to the warmth and stillness of this sacred hour. Remember, you have chosen to be here. Something in your life led you to arrive here now. Whatever tasks and cares await you, now, for this brief time, simply rest. Allow your soul to be nurtured. Let the waves in your mind and heart gradually subside. As you come home to yourself, holy and whole, come, let us worship together. Please join me in reading our congregational covenant. We covenant to create a place of respect and kindness and to build a spiritual community based on reason and courageous love. We will listen to one another respectfully, assume good intentions, use the power of our words with care, express gratitude, honor our differences, help one another, and welcome all. We will communicate directly, honestly, and compassionately. When we hurt one another, we will forgive, make amends, and reconnect. While we celebrate the words of our mission statement and of this covenant, we affirm that our mission lives through our actions.
So this morning's service is a product of our service auction. Each year I offer a sermon for auction, and often the very generous DuPonts, Frank DuPont in particular, will bid on it and give us lots of money so that I can stand up and talk to you about the topic he chooses. And the topic he chose this year was soul. And I'm going to admit that I had a hard time with this, partly because it was right before my vacation, or right after my vacation. So I got a book written by a German academician that was translated into English, and I got halfway through it, and I was like, oh, my head is such a muddle. And then I got a brief history of the soul. It wasn't that brief. So I've been, and I feel a particular responsibility to you, Frank, to do this justice. So as I, and Heather and I had a really good conversation about this, and I'm just, I just want to honor and say I'm so grateful that she has joined the worship team, and glad to have you here for your first Sunday. But anyway, as I was looking around for soul and Unitarian Universalism, I ran back into a curriculum that my husband Jamie and I taught when we were UUs up in Charlottesville. It's a program for children, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, and it's called Riddle and Mystery. We always thought it sounded like Riddle and Mystery, which as a middle school teacher made a lot of sense to me. But each week we explored a big question. And one of them is very appropriate for today. The question is, do I have a soul? And this is a pretty big question for a young person who is just figuring out what they believe, but I think it's a big question for all of us. So what do you think? Do you have a soul? If you do, what does that mean? One of the activities in the curriculum is included statements about soul from different religious traditions, which the kids could agree with or disagree with. They'd say, strongly agree, strongly disagree, and then I would read the statement and they would put themselves on the line, which end they were closest to, and then maybe even guess where that statement came from. Now, I'm not going to ask you to get up and move along a line of agreement, but listen to these statements. Do they resonate for you? Are they part of your spiritual journey? So the first one is, when you die, your soul lives on and goes to one of three places, heaven, hell, or purgatory. Any guesses where that comes from? Any Roman Catholics in the room? Yes, you remember that one? So this is a Roman Catholic belief, and this is the way they describe it. Purgatory is a nasty place where souls are purified until they are ready for heaven. Some other Christians have similar beliefs about what happens to the soul after death. Should I have done a trigger warning before doing this? You might hear things that you didn't like from your childhood. The second, when you die, your soul lives on and goes to one of two places, paradise or hell. Where do you suppose that comes from? Yes. Oh, ringer. My husband in the back room. Yes, this is a Muslim belief. And it's similar to Christian beliefs. And as they explain to the youth, this isn't surprising because the religions of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam have much in common. They're all Abrahamic religions. Number three, the soul refers to everything about us that is not physical, It cannot get sick. It cannot die. It cannot disappear. How does that resonate? Where do you think it comes from? This is maybe a little tricky. These are the thoughts of Harold Kushner, a Jewish rabbi in the conservative, which is a moderately traditional movement, and he's a popular author. He said that the soul refers to everything about us that is not physical, and he also said our souls are hungry for meaning, for the sense that we have figured out how to live so that our lives matter. I like that. All right, number four. The soul in us is reincarnated from one form of life into another. Where does that seem like it comes from? Hinduism, yeah. Anybody, does that resonate for anyone? So this is a Hindu belief, and the idea of reincarnation says that people's current lives reflect the way they lived in the past. People's present lives help determine what their next lives shall be. And the better you are in this life, the better your next life will be. And when you've lived enough lives, your spirit or your soul no longer takes a human form and instead lives with God. Number five, people are not the only creatures who have souls. Animals do too. Does that resonate for anyone? Anyone with a pet? This is the belief called animism. In fact, some animists say that not just animals, but plants and objects like stones have souls. Animism has sometimes been a part of pagan religions and is still a belief in some of today's other philosophies and religions. My cat has a soul. Number six. Soul is God in us. Does that resonate? Many people who believe in God say something like this. They say that this explains why the soul is eternal and never dies. And number seven, soul is the divine or the holy part of us. This is similar to the idea that God is in us, but you can say it whether or not you believe in God. You don't have to believe in any God to believe. Some things are holy or divine. You might say your divine soul connects you to the great mystery or the cosmos or the spirit of life. So if we were sitting in a classroom, we'd have a discussion. I invite you to consider these seven ideas of soul. Which one resonates for you now? Which one did you used to have and then let go of? And so ends our time for all ages.
One action that we take every week to live into our mission is collecting an offering for our community. And it is a practice of our congregation to share half of the offering with a local charity or UU affiliated organization. This week's recipient is March for Our Lives, a courageous youth-led movement dedicated to promoting civic engagement, education, and direct action by youth to eliminate the epidemic of gun violence. And bravo to young people who are stepping up to make their world better, not only for themselves, but for others. Please give online using the link in the chat and through the many ways listed on the screen. You will be able to give after the service as well. For those of you in the sanctuary who would like to give cash or check, there is a basket in the back of the sanctuary, right by the door. And we thank you for your generosity. As we collect our offering, we'll enjoy Brian playing When you wish upon a star, during which you are invited to light candles of hope and remembrance, please remember to maintain distance between yourself and others. And for those online, please write in the chat that you'd like a candle lit, and those will be read aloud after the offertory. Thank you. Thank you very much. Please join me as we accept these offerings. We accept these offerings in support of our congregation and our larger community, recognizing always that in giving and receiving, we participate in a circle of care with no beginning and no end.
Let's light one last candle for all the joys and sorrows, the hopes and remembrances that are left unspoken. Let's hold those in the sanctuary of our hearts. We Now I invite you into a time of meditation. This morning's words also come from that curriculum, Riddle and Mystery, which asks the big question, do I have a soul? So I invite you to settle into your chairs, to soften your shoulders, take a breath, soften your gaze or close your eyes. Start and end with the bowl. Let your thoughts drift away from your body. Let the events of the day and the clutter of the room move off into space. Let your mind float free. Take a breath. Then gradually, slowly, move into yourself. Center yourself. Find the place you cannot see. That you still know exists. The core of yourself. The deepest part of you. Experience your center. Your soul. Let it come to you. Let it show you who and what you are. Let your soul be you. Let it drift on beyond you. Let it show you who and what you are. Now slowly, gradually, come back into your body. Come back into this space. Return here. Return to all of us. Your hand on your heart. Let your soul comfort you. Let's sing our meditation hymn, Comfort Me.
Our reading today is a poem by one of our members, Frank DuPont. A note delivered with an urn of cremains by Frank DuPont. I am not here. What resides here is residue, collected dust, promised always to be returned when the former resident that had been me was done with this assemblage of Earth's elemental bounty. Energy, that other benediction, mysterious and irreplaceable, had been hurled outward by countless stars and galaxies as they too formed, then decayed, allowing the me that I was to love, to move, to wonder, and to be. Now elemental and energetic parts are separated. Yet all that was star residue destined to reconcile with its fundamental nature in an endless again. Does a me still abide without any residence of form, any nexus of connection? Adrift until a new form emerges just suited to the me that I was? Can I reside whole in the cosmic dust, enduring and changing, forever becoming like a star?
Thank you, Frank, for sharing that poem with us, and Heather, for reading it so beautifully. Your words and images express a concept of soul that resonates for me. And for my own journey of understanding. It also makes me think of our good friend and longtime UUC member, Isabel Burney, who instructed us before she died that she was going to be a cosmic mariner, destination unknown. I still think of her when I look up at the starry night sky and I wonder. Now I say my journey of understanding because the idea of soul has changed over my lifetime, as it may have for many of us. And I firmly believe that it will continue to change as I get older, informed by my new learning, but also by new intuitions and new needs. As small children, many of us were taught that our souls were the parts of us that were going to continue on after we died. The first two statements of our soul statements, we would go to heaven or hell, or some of us to purgatory, paradise or hell. When I was little, we had a cross stitch hanging up on the bedroom wall with the prayer, "Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep." Yes? If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. That prayer seems unnecessarily scary to me now. But it does express the Christian notion of the soul, that there's a part of us that does not end with our death, but will go to either heaven or to hell, depending on how we lived our lives or whether we accepted salvation through Christ. Now, as an aside, the universalist side of our religious ancestry was clear that none of us would suffer eternal damnation, believing that a loving God would never condemn his creatures to hell. But they did flirt with the idea of purgatory. In the late 18th century New England, Universalists had several opinions. Some believed that the soul would experience immediate salvation upon death. The consequences of sin were limited to life on earth. Now others believed the soul would be disciplined or educated in a period following death. After a finite though perhaps long period, the soul would be ready for eternal holiness and happiness. And still others believed everyone in the world was already saved, but that would continue to be miserable even after death until we were reconciled to God. Today, I'm guessing that most UUs believe in universal and immediate salvation, if they even think about it that way. I wonder, how many of us here believe that after we die, our souls will enter into some new otherworldly place, be it heaven or paradise, or somewhere else? Perhaps if I had known of that idea, that God wouldn't condemn any of their creations to hell, I might have continued to believe in that God and in my soul. The idea of a God who would send me to hell for not being perfect, for being human, that scared the heck out of me. But I didn't know about universalism back then, and as an adolescent, I began to question my Protestant understanding of God and of soul, and became more fascinated by other religious traditions, especially Eastern ones like Hinduism and Buddhism. And I was especially intrigued and attracted to the concept of reincarnation. And as another aside, it was amazing how many of the youth at the UU congregation, when they shared their faith statements after their coming of age program, how many of them believed in reincarnation, that something of them would survive death and come back as another living being, human or otherwise. I found it intriguing at an age when I was still pondering heaven and hell. These UU youth were pretty certain that their souls would come back to earth. And I wonder if it was because they were being raised Unitarian Universalist, that they took classes like Neighboring Face, Riddle and Mystery, where they learned about Buddhism and Hinduism. And I really wonder, now that they're young adults, what they think about the soul and where they are on their journeys. Now, during young adulthood, I had many friends, and maybe some of you did too, who fully embraced New Age concepts of reincarnation. Any New Agers in the room? I had one friend who even asserted insistently that another friend and I were sisters in a past life. And it really made sense to me at the time. I also think she was a proponent of past life regression, the use of hypnosis and questioning to uncover memories of past lives in hopes of healing current trauma or past trauma that's coming up in a current life. Have you heard about people, or maybe some of you have even had memories of living in another time? I'm always amazed that they are always on the right side. You know, it's Joan of Arc, not the people who are burning her. I wonder how many of us today believe that our souls have been in other bodies, in other times, or expect that after this life, we'll have a new one. Now, all these definitions of soul speak to what happens when we die. But in fact, concepts of soul also answer all of the questions that were raised in last week's service, when our guest Brenna Clanton brought them up, and the song that we sang. Do you remember? Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? We've been considering answers to where are we going, to heaven, to hell, to new existence. But concepts of the soul aren't just speculation about what happens after we die. They also answer questions about where we come from and who we are. Philosophers and theologians have been speculating about the nature of the soul for millennia, from Plato and Aristotle, Augustine and Aquinas, to Descartes and Kant. And it's easy to get bogged down in their different definitions and distinctions. But for me, they mostly point to the statement about soul attributed to Kushner. The soul refers to everything about us that is not physical. The soul, the mind, the psyche, the inner life that we know about ourselves through our experience of the world, the place we may have gone during the meditation. Some people think that only humans, rational beings, although sometimes we don't seem so rational, have souls, while others recognize some kind of soul, a life force in all things, in plants and animals and stones, the animist and pagan beliefs from our soul statements. But what is the soul? Our soul statements put it in religious terms most often. Soul is God in us. Soul is the divine or the holy part of us. I think of the Sanskrit term namaste, translated as some variant of the divine light in me bows to the divine light in you. Those who are more humanist might think of it as the spark of life or the life force or this little light of mine. But modern science has a different answer than the philosophers. The distinction between body and soul has been discarded by many of them. But theoretical physicist and writer Marcelo Gleiser suggests, what if we revisit the definition of soul, abandoning its canonical meaning as the spiritual or immaterial part of human being or animal, regarded as immortal, for something more modern? What if we consider your soul as the sum total of your neurocognitive essence, your very specific brain signature, the unique neuronal connections, synapses, and flow of neurotransmitters that makes you, you. Neurocognitive essence, specific brain signature, synapses, my soul. The scientists among us, and I know there are a few of you, might find this a more rational way of thinking about the soul. But it just doesn't feel useful to me. How does this kind of soul matter? How can it help us to live our lives? Now, luckily, if that kind of soul works for you, good on you. As we often say, the minister can't tell you what to believe here in a Unitarian Universalist church. Actually, if that kind of soul really does work for you, I'd love to talk with you. But this brings me to Frank's poem, the soul that I see in it anyway. He speaks of energy, that other benediction, mysterious and irreplaceable, which had been hurled outward by countless stars and galaxies as they too formed and decayed, allowing the me that I was to love, to move, to wonder, and to be. Energy, perhaps not a god or a divine spark, energy. That's a scientific term, but expressed in language that feels more soulful than neurotransmitters and synapses. There is mystery in this conception of what it is that allows us to love, to move, to wonder, and to be. And perhaps that last part is what's most important about the idea of the soul. Not whether we conceive of it in philosophical, theological, or scientific terms, not whether it lives on beyond our lives, but that our soul is what allows the me that we are to love, to move, to wonder, and to be. While Unitarian Universalists may differ on what we believe about what happens when we die, whether our souls live on or not, most agree that more important is how we live this life. And our souls, or the still small voice within, is what helps us to live our best lives, be our best, or at least our better selves. Our souls goad us into right action and right speech. Our souls lift us out of our day-to-day lives and help us seek meaning and purpose. The Unitarian minister A. Powell Davies wrote, "Whether we know much or little about the mystery of our own souls, it is at the level of the spiritual that we fulfill ourselves or are defeated. Though we gain the whole world of knowledge and power, if we lose our soul, knowledge and power will not avail us. The moral and the spiritual are not optional or mere ornaments of life. They are essential, mandatory, the very nature of humanity. And divested of them, there is nothing left but degradation and corruption." However we define or conceive of the soul, it is important that we pay attention to it, that we intentionally make room in our lives to grow our souls. And we do. That's why we're here together this morning. As our opening words invite us, we allow our souls to be nurtured. You let the waves in your mind and heart gradually subside as we come home to ourselves, holy and whole. In the busyness that is our lives, it is essential that we quiet our minds from time to time and listen through meditation or a simple stroll through the woods. The Quaker teacher Parker Palmer describes the soul as like a wild animal, tough, resilient, savvy, self-sufficient, and yet exceedingly shy. If we want to see a wild animal, the last thing we should do is go crashing the woods shouting for the creature to come out. We need to be patient and still and quiet. But we need not be alone to pay attention to our souls. In addition to Sunday services, we have a meditation group on Tuesday evenings, a yoga group on Wednesday evenings, and soon in September, we'll start up our Soul Matters small ministry, small groups. All of these give us the space and a reminder to wonder, to ask questions like the ones Frank poses in his poem. Does a me still abide without any residence of form, any nexus of connection, adrift until a new form emerges just suited to the me that I was? Can I reside whole in the cosmic dust, enduring and changing, forever becoming like a star? It is good to wonder. And it is good to sing. Our closing hymn this morning is, "I've got peace like a river." Where? In my soul. Please rise in body or spirit and let's sing. May you have peace, may you have strength, may you have joy, even when you have pain and tears in your soul. In the week ahead, take time to listen to your soul. We extinguish this chalice, but not the warmth of this community. Let's take that in our hearts until we are together again.